Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, well, there really was only one big news story this week. We'll get to that. I promise you. But you can imagine the reaction in the Oval Office and environs when all that TV time and newspaper space was being taken up with another guy. You can imagine the anger with which the felon-in-chief wrote a wonderfully enthusiastic message, written message of greeting and congratulations to that other guy. Must have been seething the entire time, but he did have one idea this week, and I don't know if it made the news, but he decided that another body of water needed to be renamed, and he telegraphed his intention to rename the Persian Gulf the Arabian Gulf, because he's not friends with the Persians, and they don't exist anymore, and he is trying to be friends with the Arabs. So at least, you know, you can understand it. I have inside information that given the prominence in his administration of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who before ascending to the cabinet was part of an organization called Make America Healthy Again, or MAHA, that the president is going to reward Kennedy by renaming a part of Mexico, instead of Baja California, Maha California. Look for that this week. Hello, welcome to the show.
We're gonna have a supper. We'll eat some food that's red.
And at the head of the table, we'll place Brother Henry's chair.
Invite all the local big dogs. We'll laugh and talk and eat. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat.
Today I'll go to market, buy up a lot of fish.
Well, that will thrill Brother Henry, 'cause fish is his special dish.
Get a large can of molasses,
have something really sweet. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Henry is not a drinker, he rarely takes a nip.
He don't need a napkin,
'cause the things he eats don't drip.
Blip. One day we had a banquet, it really was a bake.
They started off with short ribs, then finished up with steak.
But when the feast was over,
Brother Henry just kept his seat.
And we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat.
Our banquet was most proper, right down to demi-tasse.
From soup to lox and bagels and pheasant under glass.
Class, we thought the chops were mellow,
he said his chops were beat.
Reet, we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. He's an egg man, Henry don't eat no meat.
He loves a pullet,
Henry don't eat no meat. A vegetarian,
Henry?
Come in, Mother.
Soup's on.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. And we start off again what appears to be the usual way these days.
Looks like must close.
You'll figure out the connection soon enough. South Africa has criticized the U.S. as reports are emerging that suggest Washington could receive white Afrikaners as refugees as early as next week. This from the BBC. A document seen by CBS describes the potential resettlement as a priority for President Trump's government. Timing not confirmed by the White House. In a statement published this past Friday, South Africa's foreign ministry described the purported move as, quote, politically motivated. Imagine that. And designed to undermine South Africa's constitutional democracy. That's in quotes. In February, Trump described Afrikaners as victims of racial discrimination in an executive order opening up the prospect for them to resettle in the United States. That's just before he signs the declaration that calls U.S. slave owners victims. The South African authorities said they would not block the departures of those chosen for resettlement, but said they had sought assurances from the U.S. that those selected had been fully vetted and did not have pending criminal charges. We don't want the worst of... The statement added that allegations of discrimination against the country's white minority were unfounded, and that crime statistics did not indicate that any racial group had been targeted in violent crimes on farms. Some groups representing the rights of white farmers have said they are being deliberately killed because of their race, not because of the fact that they stole the land. A spokesperson of the U.S. State Department told the BBC they were interviewing individuals interested in resettling in the U.S. and prioritizing Afrikaners in South Africa, quote, who are victims of unjust racial discrimination, unquote. I thought the Trump administration has also accused South Africa, the government, of seizing land from white farmers without compensation. Pretoria has repeatedly denied that. Here he is, Elon Musk, a top advisor in the Trump administration who grew up in South Africa during apartheid when times were good, has been critical of Pretoria, claiming it is leading a genocide against white farmers. Usually not known for overstatement, Elon. U.S. officials have planned a press event this week at Dulles Airport in Virginia to welcome the group. 54 Afrikaners will arrive as part of the first group. As you know, the decision to accept South Africans as refugees comes as the administration has halted nearly all asylum claims from those of other nationalities. News of Musk love. And now?
Get the hell off the couch, Harry. You big slob, get off the couch.
I'm off it. Now news of the warm, won't you? I thought you would.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
This is bad news for the couple of guys mentioned in the earlier item. Wealthy individuals have a higher carbon footprint. A new study published in Nature Climate Change quantifies the climate outcomes of these inequalities. The world's wealthiest 10% are responsible for 2/3 of observed global warming since 1990 and the resulting increases in climate extremes, your heat waves, your droughts. The study assesses the contribution of the highest emitting groups within societies. The top 1% of the wealthiest individuals globally contributed 26 times the global average in increases in heat extremes globally, and 17 times more in Amazon droughts. I didn't know they sold those. The research sheds new light on the links between income-based emissions inequality and climate injustice, illustrating how the consumption and investments of wealthy individuals have had disproportionate impacts on extreme weather events. These impacts are especially severe in vulnerable tropical regions. Your Amazon, your Southeast Asia, your Southern Africa. Welcome. All areas that have historically contributed the least in global emissions. Quote, our study shows that extreme climate impacts are not just the result of abstract global emissions. Instead, we can directly link them to our lifestyle and investment choices, which in turn are linked to wealth. According to lead author Sarah Schoengart, currently associated with ETH in Zurich, not a meme coin. Quote, we further found that wealthy emitters play a major role in driving climate extremes, providing strong support for climate policies that target the reduction of their emissions, she said. The study also emphasizes the importance of emissions embedded in financial investments rather than just personal consumption. The authors argue that targeting the financial flows and portfolios of high-income individuals could yield substantial climate benefits. Must be why they're against it. News of the warm. Time now for News of the Godly. And yes, this begins our coverage of that area of life. This from Agence France-Presse.
Ah, the French.
Dateline Vatican City. Nuns being sexually assaulted by priests is one of the last Catholic taboos. But with reports of abuse rising, it is a scandal that will be difficult for the future pope. Congratulations, Leo. To ignore. In the past, the nun suffered a lot and couldn't talk about it to anyone. It was like a secret, Sister Christina Schork told Agence France-Presse, walking through St. Peter's Square with her parents. 41-year-old Brazilian, who's with the Daughters of Mary Help of Christians in Rome, said Pope Francis opened the first door for women to speak out. That's what that door was for. After an unprecedented summit at the Vatican on clerical sexual violence way back in 2019, a series of measures were taken, including lifting the pontifical secret on abuse and an obligation for people to report cases to their superiors. Like, that's new. Quote, it's both still a taboo and something that has progressed because it has never been talked about as much as it is today, said Sister Veronique Magron, president of the Conference of Religious of France. Victims associations say the Vatican has not done enough, particularly by refusing to remove confessional secrecy. Quote, things are moving forward step by step. That's what a senior ecclesiastical official told AFP, the French news agency, on condition of anonymity, pointing out Pope Francis, quote, has denounced all forms of abuse, unquote. Nuns in Rome to study, work, or accompany pilgrims come and go every day in St. Peter's Square, far from the media hype surrounding the cardinals, among them Sister Marthe, a nun from Cameroon in her 40s, said she wanted the church to, quote, know how to respond to sexual or power abuse, unquote. Last January, Pope Francis named a woman to head of Vatican ministry for the first time in the church's 2,000-year history, but many are calling for more space for women, who far outnumber the men in the church. 559,000 female members of religious orders, 128,000 559 Catholic priests globally, according to the Vatican. They should know. This is a legacy of a pyramidal and macho vision, said Marta Galdaletta, Secretary General of the Augustinian Servants of Jesus and Mary. New Pope Leo is in an Augustinian order. In Rome, Sister Eugenia told the French news agency she was convinced that, quote, by fighting against clericalism, unquote, the idea of the clergy as an elite, quote, we are also fighting against all abuses, unquote. And in January, former Pope Francis himself called for the church to overcome the macho mentality, his words, insisting that nuns should not be treated, quote, like servants, unquote. Me, I say treat them like nuns. Speaking of Catholicism, of course, the media were awash with coverage of the conclave and its eventual result. But we're not through yet. You remember Chris Wallace. He used to be on TV. He's on the scene in Vatican City for us right now. Chris?
Harry, much of the crowd has stayed put here in Vatican City, and some of them have told me they're eagerly anticipating even more smoke. Informed sources can't confirm that expectation. Meantime, some of the world's musicians have already come up with musical salutes to the red, white, and blue pontiff.
Smoke. Yeah, this is Mr. White Smoke.
He's an American Pope. No, it ain't no joke. When the children come, he'll give them gum and an American grope.
More news from Rome way before it becomes available. Right now, back to you.
Thanks, Chris. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better, hip hip hooray.
Well, yes, but just 2 years ago, prompt engineering was hailed as a hot new job in tech. That doesn't mean engineers who show up on time. It means people who figure out what combination of words is a most effective prompt to get a useful answer out of large language models. Now, according to Fast Company, it's all but disappeared, that job. At the beginning of the corporate AI boom, some companies sought out large language model translators, prompt engineers who specialized in crafting the most effective questions, ensuring optimal and efficient outputs. Today, strong AI prompting is simply an expected skill, not a standalone role. Some companies are even using AI to generate the best prompts for their AI systems. Yeah, let the machines write the questions that the machines answer. Why don't we? The decline of prompt engineering serves as a cautionary tale for the AI job market. The niche roles that emerged with ChatGPT's rise may prove to be short-lived. While AI is reshaping roles across industries, it may not be creating entirely new ones, says Malcolm Frank of an engineering employment group. Quote, AI is already eating its own. Prompt engineering has become something that's embedded in almost every role, and people know how to do it. Also, now AI can help you write the perfect prompts that you need. Unquote. Just a personal note. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. I don't think so. A friend asked a large language model. She was inspired by the story I think I shared here about Gary Marcus, an AI critic, having asked an LLM to write a bio of him, and it was perfectly accurate until it came up with something he didn't have, a chicken named Henrietta. So inspired by that, another friend asked such a machine to write a biography of me, and it came back kinda accurate, except its first words were British writer-actor Harry Shearer, and the part I played in This Is Spinal Tap was identified as Dennis Stanfill. Well, they got the initials right. More AI news following considerable cuts in its enforcement workforce. The U.S. Internal Revenue Service plans to use AI to supplement its ability to collect taxes from U.S. citizens and maybe British writer actors. The news of the IRS's plan came from U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent during a committee hearing this week to discuss the Treasury's budget proposal. When asked by Congressman whether proposed reductions in the IRS IT budget, along with plans to cut staff, would affect the agency's ability to collect tax revenue, Bessent said it wouldn't, thanks to the, quote, AI boom, unquote. So it makes a boom in his neighborhood. Quote, I believe through smarter IT, through this AI boom, that we can use that to enhance collections, he said. I expect collections would continue to be very robust as they were this year, unquote. His comments didn't explain how the IRS intends to deploy AI. The Treasury Department's Inspector General's office issued a report last week on IRS workforce reductions as of March, indicating more than 11,000 IRS employees, about 11% of the service's workforce, hey, 11 and 11, Doge works, had been terminated since the Office of Personnel Management began directing government agencies to cut jobs. Revenue agents, their job is to audit tax returns for accuracy, made up the bulk of those fired. 31% of the revenue agent workforce were let go. Second most slashed position, revenue officers, they're responsible for collecting delinquent taxes. Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, made clear that replacing those terminated employees with new agents and officers wouldn't be worthwhile, as collection agents need time on the job to become affected. Quote, there's nothing that shows historically that bringing in unseasoned collections agents will result in more collections, he said. But unseasoned machines? Sure. And yet more. This also from the Register, as was the previous item. Only a quarter of AI initiatives have delivered the expected return on investment. That's according to an IBM survey of 2,000 CEOs. The study's findings show that despite the hype around generative AI, that's the language of the Register, enterprises are struggling to get real value from the tech. Just over half of CEO respondents say their organization is realizing value from Gen AI investments beyond cost reduction. Enterprises aren't ready to give up their dream of using AI to automate their workforces out the door. Study shows CEOs expect the growth rate of AI investments to more than double over the next 2 years. 61% say they're already adopting AI agents and preparing to scale them across their organizations. Me, I don't have an agent, but that rather than the chatbots, image generators are search engines many of us associated with the tech. AI agents seek to automate entire tasks by stitching together multiple tools, models, and data sources with or without a human being in the loop. Right now, enterprise AI deployments appear quite narrow. The survey found just 16% of the initiatives have scaled across entire enterprise. Where they're investing in AI, IBM says 65% of chief executives are prioritizing use cases based on the potential return on investment. Most of this adoption, says IBM, is being driven by FOMO, fear of missing out. Nobody wants to get left behind on the off chance AI lives up to the hype. This appears to have driven nearly two-thirds of the respondents, 64%, to adopt technology before they figured out whether it will actually benefit the organization. That wouldn't raise prices or anything. And a report from McKinsey & Company highlights the widespread unease over AI, pointing to the bewildering sums being invested into infrastructure to support it. You know, all those new electric plants for data centers. While, this report warns, that forecasts of future demand are based on little more than guesswork. What's wrong with guesswork? This is from the Register as well. The boom in AI investment has gained momentum over the past year or so. McKinsey now guesstimates that data centers equipped to handle AI workloads could require as much as $7.9 trillion in capital expenditure by 2030 to keep up with that demand that they're only guessing about. One question left unasked in the report: what happens if AI turns out to be useful for certain specific tasks, but not the general purpose magic bullet that many corporate leaders believe will automate many of their business processes and let them save big on costs? Mainly, yes, by eliminating human workers. Quote, for example, a working paper released earlier this month found that generative AI has had no significant impact on earnings or recorded hours in any occupation so far, despite the billions poured into building and training the models. Yeah, they may just end up being good identifying British actor writers. AI, hip hip hooray AI.
It's a beautiful morning. It's a wonderful life. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning. It's a wonderful life. So maybe you can tell me why I'm still not satisfied. I've got everything I need. I got nothing to hide. Yeah, I got everything I need. I got nothing to hide. It's a mystery to me why I'm still not satisfied. I've seen the Mona Lisa, I've been the Big Mamu, I've laughed until I cried. Sackcloth and ashes, 10,000 naps, there's not a lot I have not tried. I don't understand why I'm still not. The side. Yeah, I've been up on the mountain. Lord, I've seen the other side. But seeing's not believing, and I'm still not satisfied. Colorado's on my mind. Yeah, I live in Tennessee, but Colorado's on my mind. But my heart's in Louisiana, and I'm still not satisfied. Yeah, my heart's in Louisiana, and I'm sure not satisfied. I just can't be satisfied. I just can't be satisfied.
ain't satisfied. No, I just can't be satisfied.
From the West Coast, this is Le Show, and now...
We've got the ultra-modern knack of getting oil from the deepest crack. So give the boys just a bit of slack and say a hearty what the frack.
Nearly 1 week after a magnitude 5.4 earthquake shook the area around El Paso, Texas, experts are revealing what may have caused it. The quake hit last week with a preliminary rating of 5.3 on the Richter scale. Epicenter located 50 miles west of Pecos. You know where Pecos is? It's near Pecos. It was then increased to a magnitude 5.4 the next day. Quote, we believe the root cause of that has to do with a byproduct of hydraulic fracturing. And a byproduct would mean that when you hydraulically fracture formations to get out oil and gas, the byproduct is oil, gas, and water, said a professor in the Department of Earth Sciences at University of Texas, El Paso. According to him, Dr. Velasco, this led to the weakening of an ancient fault located well below the Earth's surface. Quote, there's a formation that we call the pay zone. That's where the out-of-work actors say, no, that's where they do the fracking, and you can inject water above that or water below. He continues, and it turns out this particular area, that the injection of water below the pay zone is where we're getting problems because water is migrating into ancient faults. And the stress has already been there, but what we're doing is basically weakening faults, unquote. Humans are good at that. Next.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Some 460 million metric tons of plastic are produced globally each year. Are you consuming your part? Out of which a staggering 91% of plastic waste is never recycled, 12% incinerated, 79% left to end up in landfills and oceans and the rest of our environment. This according to phys.org. Exposure to various elements causes the plastics to break down into microplastics and nanoplastics. There's a growing public health concern that nanoplastics, NPs to us, make their way into the human body through air, water, food, and contact with skin. Ugh. A recent study published in the American Chemical Society Water Bulletin has revealed that the detrimental effects of NPs are further amplified by their ability to interact with various toxic environmental contaminants, such as heavy metal ions. Researchers from the New Jersey Institute of Technology found that NPs synthesized from real-world plastic waste, polyethylene terephthalate, polystyrene, and polypropylene, our buds, these are our buds, can readily absorb harmful lead and cadmium ions and act as Trojan horses. They're not really horses, carrying these metals into organisms and increasing bioaccumulation. The worst kind of accumulation. Studies have found that NPs can move around in our bodies. Their presence has been detected in human blood, fecal samples, autopsied lungs, semen, and even in human placentas. They may be dangerous, but they got a stronger stomach. When the immune system attempts to eliminate these artificial particles, it leads to an increased risk of neoplasia, uncontrolled abnormal growth of cells or tissues, and persistent inflammation. Furthermore, the large surface area makes it easier for the NPs to absorb heavy metals like your lead, your cadmium, your mercury, and your arsenic from their surroundings. Once absorbed, these heavy metals go wherever the NPs do, making them more bioavailable. They're more easily taken up by organisms, worsening potential health risks. Research has established the size and shape of NPs do play a key role in deciding the physicochemical properties and toxicity of the plastic bits. So, I guess, stay away from the smaller ones. That's always good advice. And now...
Bad Bank.
Well, last year, banks quickly raised interest rates to record levels and added new monthly fees on credit cards. That was when a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau rule threatened a key revenue source for the industry. Now, bank trade groups succeeded in killing the rule in federal court last month, but the banks are reluctant to reverse those raised rates. Synchrony and Bread Financial, two of the biggest players in the business of issuing branded credit cards for the likes of Amazon, Lowe's, and Wayfair, are keeping the higher rates in place. Executives said in recent conference calls, quote, "We feel pretty comfortable that the rule has been vacated," said Brian Doubles of Synchrony. "With that said," he adds, "we don't currently have plans to roll anything back in terms of the changes that we made," unquote, i.e., the raised interest rates. His counterpart at Bread, CEO Ralph Andretta, echoed that sentiment. At this point, he says, "We're not intending to roll back those changes, and we've talked to the partners about that," unquote. The CEO celebrated the end of a proposed regulation that was meant to limit what Americans would pay in credit card late fees, an effort that the industry called a misguided and unlawful example of regulatory overreach. Under the previous director of the CFPB, Rohit Chopra, the agency estimated its rule would save families $10 billion annually. Families don't need them. Instead, it inadvertently saddled borrowers with higher rates and fees for receiving paper statements as credit card companies sought to offset the expected revenue hit. For perspective, retail cards hit a record high average interest rate. I'm taking a deep breath before I say this. 30.5% last year. Rates have stayed close to those levels this year. Because those are bad banks. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our coverage of this week's Conclave Associated Activities continues. We go now live to an area just outside of Vatican City for a part of a live concert by the St. Jim's Altar Boys Choir.
I think you did it again. You made me believe I don't deserve your love. Oh, Father, it might look like a crime, but it doesn't mean that I had a bad time. And if I tell my parents, that'll be so bad for me. Father, Father, oops, you did it again. You played with my thing. It wasn't a game. Father, Father, oops, you think I'll say, Mom, why I'm looking glum? You're just so innocent. I see your problem is this. I'm staying awake, wishing angels, they're not just on cake. I cry seeing the cops, just wishing that you had just kept on your chops. This is one of my hardest journeys, having to search for attorneys.
We'll resume coverage the very next conclave. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Reading, Pennsylvania, the Reading Parking Authority has issued an apology after issuing tickets during Taco Fest. Reading Parking Authority says during Taco Fests, some tickets were issued in error. If you or someone you know received a ticket during that time, Parking Authority says to call them. Says it's not needed to come in person. They'll verify and cancel the ticket immediately. Cathay Pacific Airlines apologized to a family after a flight attendant mistakenly served a three-year-old boy a glass of white wine with his meal. Don't they know three-year-olds like red? The incident occurred in business class from Hong Kong to London. Late last month, the child's mother contacted the South China Morning Post newspaper after initially posting on a Chinese social media platform. The woman, the publication identified her only by the surname Wong. Yes, that narrows it down. Said the child took a sip of what he thought to be water and said it tasted sour. His father then checked the drink, found it was actually wine. The mother said flight attendants quickly replaced her son's drink with water. The airline said in a statement the cabin crew put out a call to medical personnel aboard the flight and consulted a ground-based medical service before monitoring the boy's condition for the rest of the flight. But during the whole process, there was a lack of care for my son, the woman told the newspaper. They gave me the impression they were trying to shirk responsibility. On the other hand, Cathay Pacific says it sincerely apologizes for the incident. We will continue to support and assist the family. And next time the kid flies them, he gets beer. The BBC has another apology this week. There's one a week. It's admitted to a lapse in, quote, our usual high editorial standards in the coverage of the Duke of Sussex's interview. Harry, Prince Harry, spoke to the BBC late this week after he lost an appeals court challenge over his security arrangements while in the UK. The BBC Today program covered the Duke, describing his court defeat as a good old-fashioned establishment stitch-up. They had an interview with a close protection expert. I want one of those. Where Harry's stitch-up claims were repeated, according to the BBC. We failed to properly challenge this and other allegations, the BBC said on its Corrections and Clarifications website. This case is ultimately the responsibility of the Home Office. We should have reflected that and their statement. The corporation should have given the view of Buckingham Palace. This was a lapse in our usual high editorial standards. The Home Office said we're pleased the court has found in favor of the government's position in this case. Loss for Harry. Not me. Dateline Decatur, Georgia. The city of Decatur has taken a big step toward reparations for African-American residents who suffered historical discrimination in the area. At a meeting this week, the Decatur City Council unanimously adopted a resolution to create the Decatur Reparations Task Force to begin compiling records and develop policy recommendations. Last year, city leaders unanimously approved a contract with the Beacon Hill Black Alliance for Human Rights for work on reparations research, which officials said helped to, quote, uncover the legacy of racial harm in the city of Decatur. In the time since the contract was authorized, officials say the group has held community gatherings and listening sessions. In the new resolution, the city pointed to the area's history of slavery, segregation, redlining, and property seizures. What do they think they are, South Africa? The resolution also pointed to Confederate monuments formerly located near the DeKalb County Courthouse and other parts of the city. Coming up, the City Commission will appoint 11 members to take part in the task force, historians, legal experts, youth representatives, and more. The group will then compile records of black land and property loss, examine economic displacement, and legalize discrimination. You know, like that. The task force will also begin developing recommendations on how to access and address the harm and propose city-sponsored memorialization projects, economic equity tools, and investment strategies. As part of the resolution, the city formally acknowledged its history. Quote, the city of Decatur formally acknowledges its past role in the systemic oppression of people of African descent through enslavement, human trafficking, convict labor. Look that one up. in a book called Slavery by Another Name. Discriminatory zoning and development, underinvestment in African-American communities, school segregation, racially biased policing, the destruction of African-American-owned property, businesses, and institutions, and the displacement and erasure of the Beacon Hill community, people, and culture, unquote. The latter happened in the post-war American era in a number of cities, including right here in Santa Monica and in New Orleans. City officials also apologized for its role in enslaving, trafficking, and oppressing black residents. Quote, the city extends a full and public apology to the black residents of Decatur, past and present, and their descendants for its role in perpetuating discrimination, oppression, subjugation, and the resulting harms, profiting from policies rooted in the system of white supremacy. Unquote. And an emotional Jacqueline Ma, who groomed two boys and entered into a sexual relationship with one when he was 12, read a statement to a San Diego court this week prior to learning her fate. She was a former teacher who was once named one of San Diego County's top educators. She was sentenced a couple days ago to 30 years to life in state prison for sex crimes involving two minors. Prosecutors say Jacqueline Ma, 36, groomed two boys and entered into a sexual relationship with one of them, beginning when he was 12 years old. At her court hearing, Ma issued a tearful apology in which she said, quote, I'm deeply ashamed of my actions. She said she manipulated and deceived the boys and said the boys' families trusted her. Quote, I ripped away their childhood. Instead of following the path of what a teacher should be, I let my selfishness override the boys' best interests, unquote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this program. And now, the side effects of the week.
Do not use Vyvgart Hytrulo if you have a serious allergy to any of its ingredients. Serious allergic reactions like trouble breathing and decrease in blood pressure leading to fainting, and allergic reactions such as rashes, swelling under the skin, shortness of breath, and hives have been reported. The most common side effects are respiratory and urinary tract infections, headache, and injection site reactions. It may increase the risk of infusion-related reactions and infection. Tell your doctor if you have a history of infections or symptoms of an infection.
Wouldn't my doctor know if I have an infection? I'm telling him? Also, Doc, I have a ulcer. And now, ladies and gentlemen, buckle up and get warm because it's a crypto winter. Brr. Despite the $1.4 billion lost in the recent Bybit hack, we covered that on this program, crypto companies have not changed their approach to cybersecurity, according to the head of a group called Hacken, Dima Budoran. In an interview with Cointelegraph, a crypto-centered medium, at an event in Dubai, Budoran said the industry continues to rely on limited resources such as bug bounties and penetration tests, I like those, rather than implementing comprehensive layered security strategies. Quote, most of the projects think, okay, we did pen tests, that's enough. Maybe bug bounty, that's enough. It's not enough, unquote. He said crypto companies must go beyond these isolated security measures and adopt more layered approaches similar to those of traditional industries. These include supply chain security, operational security, and blockchain-specific security assessments. In big Web 2 companies, this is mandatory, he said. While crypto security approaches remained the same, post-hack security approaches shifted slightly. Cointelegraph quoted him as saying there were some improvements in the crypto space's post-hack security responses. But wait, there's more. Wall Street investors scoffed at it. Democrats have railed against it. Cryptocurrency traders can't get enough of President Donald Trump's meme coin. That's right. A convicted felon has, in the 2 weeks since plans for an exclusive dinner with the Trump meme coin's namesake were unveiled, This is according to Politico. A rush of interest has boosted the once flagging collectible crypto token, reigniting a firestorm on Capitol Hill. The meme coin, whose logo is an image of Trump raising his fist, because he couldn't get an orange, have jumped nearly, well, it has jumped nearly 20% in value as traders have raced to snatch it up, hoping to score an invite to the May 22 dinner at the President's Golf Club in Virginia, even though there's no guarantee he will actually show up. The surge of trading has generated more than $1 million in fees for the Trump family and its partners. They have now collected more than $320 million since the meme coin debuted in January, according to an analytics company called Chainalysis. The event is drawing criticism from Democrats, calling it a pay-to-play scheme. One of the Democrats involved introduced a bill this week that would bar senior executive branch officials, including the president, from offering or endorsing financial products like meme coins. The bill was sponsored by 13 lawmakers. Quote, the sitting president appears to be selling personal cryptocurrency while in office, granting access to people who buy it, and thereby enriching his business and his family. It's gobsmacking, said Democratic Senator John Ossoff of Georgia. Senator Cynthia Lummis, a Wyoming Republican and staunch crypto ally, well, even so, she told NBC News the dinner is giving her pause. A spokesperson for her declined to comment further, but shared a statement from the senator calling Trump, quote, the most pro-digital assets president in history, unquote. He hasn't been convicted of that yet. Just days before his inauguration, the meme coin was launched and has drawn concern over its potential to become a conduit for foreign actors, corporate interests, and others looking to curry favor with the president or his family. Another crypto venture tied to Trump and his sons, World Liberty Financial, is facing questions from Democrats over its business dealings, and especially its role in facilitating a $2 billion investment from an Abu Dhabi-backed firm into the crypto exchange giant Binance. Maybe this is why he wants to call it the Arabian Sea. Ethics watchdogs continue to scrutinize the Trump Organization's work overseas. Quote, it doesn't take any imagination to see how a cryptocurrency issued by Trump or his family members will quickly become a tool of bribery and foreign manipulation, said a Democratic congressperson who represents parts of Silicon Valley. Trump himself, when asked about concerns he's profiting from the presidency, said he wasn't aware that the meme coin's price had risen after the dinner announcement, and added he wasn't profiting from anything. Quote, I started this long before the election. I want crypto. I think crypto's important because if we don't do it, China's going to do it. And it's new. It's very popular. It's very hot. Unquote. By the way, lest she feel left out, First Lady Melania Trump has her own meme coin. No. You don't have to get in line to buy it. It's going to be there for you. And former Celsius CEO Alex Mashinsky was sentenced to 12 years in prison. Prosecutors previously said Mashinsky orchestrated, quote, one of the biggest frauds in the crypto industry, unquote. And that's got to be kind of big. People lost their life savings and suffered psychologically, said the judge. According to Inner City Press, Mashinsky, 59 years old, should know better, pleaded guilty to two counts in December, including commodities fraud and another about a fraudulent scheme to manipulate the price of the firm's token, CEL. He was arrested a couple of years ago after prosecutors said he defrauded customers and misled them about Celsius's profitability. He also faced charges including securities fraud and wire fraud. It's like a fraudster. Celsius, his company, operated as a crypto lender that allowed customers to earn interest and take out loans. The firm filed for bankruptcy in 2022, wound down in 2024. As part of its wind down, some funds were used to create a new Bitcoin mining company. He just can't stop it. And finally, President Trump, you've heard of him. He's the convicted felon in the White House. He was reportedly upset after he learned that his Truth Social post saying that XRP, Solana, and Cardano should be included in a crypto strategic reserve was crafted by a lobbyist firm working for another crypto outfit, Ripple. An employee of Ballard Partners, the lobbying group run by Brian Ballard, is said to have provided Trump with a message they thought the president should write. According to Politico, Trump then posted the missive, but then became angry when he learned that Ballard worked for Ripple. Cardano, XRP, and Solana all rose in price after Trump posted that they should be included in a crypto strategic reserve. I will make sure, he continued, the U.S. is the crypto capital of the world, because the fraud capital has already been taken. He also clarified the planned reserve would also hold Bitcoin and Ethereum, the ones that are well known. Trump was not only furious and felt like he'd been used, Ballard quickly became a pariah in the West Wing in the aftermath. The worst place to be a pariah. Ooh, it's a crypto winner. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week at the same time. And hope you'll be with us then, either on radio at the same time or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, remaindered, I guess, now. And the playlist of the music you heard here on, as well as other things to watch and listen to, all at harryshear.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.